Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the United Lodge of Theosophists here in Philadelphia. We are one of many around the world that whose sole bond between all of its members is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of theosophy. And no matter where you go, whatever country, whatever language, you will always hear the declaration of the United Lodge of Theosophists. And we'll read it now. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave at the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of theosophy and the exemplification and practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers, the sole bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization, and it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. So in order for this lodge to participate in spread broadcasting these ideas, we have two meetings a week. On Wednesdays, we are looking at the, The
Supplementary General.
Supplementary General at the back of Answers to Questions. So that's on Wednesdays. The study class is from 7:30 to 8:30, and classes are open to all students and visitors alike. The library opens at 5:15 until 7:15. It is a reference library, and there's always the reading for that night's class available along with the reference. And if you have a particular study or question, there is a student available that can help you do your research in the library. And the book table is open before and after all meetings. On Sundays, the building opens at 10:30. The classes go from 11 until 12. So today we are looking at the culture of concentration and meditation. And next Sunday, the title is Removing the Cause of Sorrow. And the overall umbrella topic for this month is practical theosophy. And this is for the Sunday classes. The United Lodge of Theosophists is financially sustained entirely by voluntary contributions. The activities depend similarly on voluntary offerings and time and work. All are invited to participate, but no obligation is imposed or implied. So as we said, today's class is the culture of concentration and meditation. And we will have, it's a panel discussion. The first talk will be on concentration. The second talk will be on meditation. And afterwards, there will be plenty of time for questions and discussions. So in regards to concentration then, the definition of concentration is the action or power of focusing one's attention or mental effort, dealing with one particular thing above all others. And it's an interesting concept because we think that we're concentrating. Like we get up in the morning, we concentrate to get our breakfast, we concentrate to get dressed, we concentrate to do whatever it is that we have planned for the day. But in reality, these are just actions that we're doing almost like rote. It's things that we have been doing since we were babies, pretty much. So these are things that we're doing because it's always been done. And what happens is in our minds then, there are certain actions. It's like learning how to play an instrument. Once you learn all the notes and the fingerings, when you think about playing it, that's when you get confused and your fingers don't know what they're doing. But if you just let the lives in your body, which have been impressed by all these things that we have done over and over and over again, it's more of a physical type of experience. But when we're looking at the culture of concentration, we're looking at, especially theosophically, we are definitely looking at something totally different. And one of the problems is that our society, especially today, there are so many distractions. Everything has to be done now. We can't wait. There's a saying about waiting for, can't remember what it is. But if we delay gratification, that's it. You know, we don't delay gratification anymore. And that builds character, believe it or not, if we have to wait for something rather than having it done immediately and finding the answer. And consequently then, this makes concentration very hard to attain, true concentration. Because when we try to focus then, there's all these different things that are jumping into our minds, whether it's emotions, it's what we have to do the rest of the day. And if we can develop our concentration to be more focused, we would be able to develop more of a control over our thoughts, and then we would be able to concentrate better. And it would also help to prevent certain ideas from entering into our mind, which may or may not be something that should be there. In addition, these new actions that we can attain by learning how to concentrate, it can expand our minds about what we can do and what we can't. And successful concentration is also known as one-pointedness. And this is the ability to focus on one idea, one object, on a desired object consistently and persistently. It is a means of arriving at the full expression of our powers and energy. Then we have to remember that at this stage of our evolution, we're, most of us, we should say, are functioning in the lower mind. The mind being dual, there's a higher aspect and a lower aspect. Even though it's only one mind, it's how we are thinking and acting. So right now, because of all these distractions, most of us are focused on what we can get now. And the problem with that is that it causes us to be distracted, aimless, and to focus less. Our goal then is to try and raise our lower mind more towards the higher. And consistent attempts to concentrate can assist us to be more productive. And being more productive will make us more, we will be able to concentrate better. So it's a two-edged sword, but it's a good thing. Because if we concentrate more, if we try and we practice to, then eventually we'll be able to concentrate more. And it definitely improves our whole life. We have at the book table Patanjali's Yoga Aphorisms, which is a really good primer for how to learn. And you have to be able to concentrate in order to read it. It's really explains a lot. And one of the aphorisms states, the concentration or yoga is the hindering of the modifications of the thinking principle. And mainly what this is saying is that when he speaks of modifications, we're looking at all those distractions. So we want to hinder, we want to prevent those modifications, those distractions from cropping up when we're trying to concentrate. So the way to increase our power to concentrate then is to hinder these modifications of the thinking principle. And one way we can do this is to look at the two ideas of desire and will. They come into play here. And so if we, our desire then would be that we want to be able to concentrate, we want to be able to keep all these distractions out of our mind. And so by this idea of desiring to do this, it can give an impetus to the will to do it. So in our mind, we're actually thinking of what we want to do, and then if we focus enough on it, then we will be able to do it. And by being able to do it, we reach inward, and by this way, we are drawing out the knowledge that is inherent in us of focusing on the higher self. And one of the interesting things, theosophy speaks of everything is dual. So there's a duality to concentration as well, because somebody can concentrate on wanting to meditate. They want to be able to concentrate and read for a longer period of time. But there's also the negative aspect of concentration if you're going to be concentrating on a negative idea, doing something bad. And so we want to have the inner man, that higher self, developed by concentration. So as we had said, a lack of concentration can cause one's life to be aimless and fruitless, because you start thinking about, oh, I want to do a certain thing, I want to learn a certain topic, I want a certain job, and you think about it, yeah, this sounds really good, but then something pops in and it distracts you from following through on what it is you need to do to attain these. So we're also looking at the idea, if we can concentrate, we can do our duty better. We can realize the spirituality in others, because if we are concentrating on the higher self, our higher nature, then we will follow through on our duty, which is whatever it is that comes to us is ours from a previous life, from a previous experiences. So when concentration begins, this is one thing that was an interesting thought. When concentration begins, the astral organs awaken and they separate from the actual physical ones. And by this occurring, we become more focused. We can manage to keep our lives more organized. So consistent practice, that's the main thing, is consistent when we, no matter what we do, you know, even if we're making dinner, focus on exactly what it is we're doing, rather than thinking about, well, what's going to happen tomorrow? Because if we can start focusing on the mundane aspects of our lives, and we can gradually spread that concerted mind to other things, to higher things. So it is an idea that we can follow through with, being consistent in concentrating on everything that we do. So we just want to end and we forget which magazine article this was from. It says, we strive in vain to escape from necessary duties and to follow the lure of desire. Unsuccessful striving results in deeply chafed sores from the bonding irons. Successful striving but exposes the fact that we have exchanged old fetters for new. So this is what happens when we can't concentrate, is that our lives, we escape from the necessary duties, and instead we follow, as he is put here, the lure of desires. Any being performing duty, not for self, but because it is duty, reaches the condition of soul wherein there is indifference as to the nature of action so long as it is action done for the common good. Now, when we think of the word indifference, we normally think of indifference with a negative connotation, but we can also look at indifference as separating ourselves from those ideas that are just kind of popping into our minds. So if we can separate ourselves and be indifferent to those different ideas that are popping into one's mind, there's a better chance that we can concentrate. And in so doing, he discovers that the illusion that happiness depended upon sensation is only a dream. So this is what happens when we do begin to concentrate and the astral organs are separating, because that's where sensation lies, is in the physical organs, the physical senses. So by concentrating and separating the astral organs from the physical, then by not having those physical organs involved, we're not going to, we hopefully will not have as many distractions, physical distractions. You know, we're trying to concentrate and it's like, oh, I'm stiff or I can't think or anything that pops into your mind. True happiness arises spontaneously from within. This, whenever the self is freed from outward reaching desires. Thank you. So now we'll hear on meditation.
Meditation. Well, why do we want to meditate? What is the end we have in view? For what purpose? Well, it's stated that through meditation, one can isolate oneself. So what does that mean, isolate? I thought we were for humanity. I thought we were a oneness. Well, we are. But the isolation comes in the soul. We live in a world now where we are the servant of our brain, of our mind, and of our soul. We are led around by sensations and by the world around us because we feel obligated to interact, because I'm here. Let me interact with it. Let me learn from it. But we are told that, as was stated, the astral is the world in which we are truly operating. And that we need to separate ourselves from this. And that's from our emotional nature. So we are asked to make the mind a servant to the soul. We are not mind beings, we are souls in evolution. The mind is just an instrument that we use to gather information and experience. So if our object is to isolate the soul so that it's free from the pair of opposites, it's free from the material world in which it lives, which it has its existence. And by so doing, one is able to look directly upon ideas. One has true perception, true discrimination. When we started, how did we get here? What do we do? What do we have to do? What is there? Are there ways of doing this? Yes, there are definite ways of doing this. And it's said that no one wants to know more than how to meditate. How do I meditate? Do I go to a group? Do I go here? Do I go there? Well, Mr. Judge translated a book called Patanjali's Yoga Aphorisms. And he has little excerpts all through his writings. And it refers back to this book, back to this book. And he admonishes students in the 1800s, says, if you want to learn how to meditate, read Patanjali's Yoga Aphorisms. Don't wander, read it. Make it a companion book. Study it. And that way, you imbue yourself with the ideas that permeate this book. This point of meditation, it's where we meet Ishvara, the great warrior that's described in the Gita, the perceiver that's unaffected by change, always watching and always watchful. We can meet our own Ishvara. We can make him a warrior in our life. So we have the meditation like we travel to, we go and sit in a special spot away from everything. And we consider or hold an idea and we contemplate, we consider it. And then, you know, like we have an argument with ourselves and we look at it and we see all the different aspects of it. Well, that's just one technique. It's just one technique. Mr. Judge says that mutterings will bring you back to concentration. A smell will bring you back to something, a concentration. A sound will bring you back. Because if you do in that moment, in that space which you have reserved for this, and if you cannot, it's that place in your mind that you have reserved for this. But when you enter it, a lot of traditions, they ring a bell. A lot of traditions, they light incense. Only to remind us of the place we're going to, that exists within us. So it takes us back to a lifetime's meditation. We all have a lifetime's meditation because from the beginning to the end, we're doing something. We're active. And it's usually directed in a certain direction, either for love, for money, for excitement, adventure. But there's a thread. Well, we are given another gift by Mr. Judge. The Bhagavad Gita. That is a meditation. If you want to meditate, have a lifetime's meditation, read the Bhagavad Gita and put your energy in motion to emulate those ideas. Just knowing that we are engrossed in matter, how do we elevate ourselves? How do we take ourselves up higher? How do we help change this world from being competitive and right and wrong and angry to a world that shows some kind of compassion, understanding for one's fellow human beings. Not so quick to judge, but standing as a witness. That is what we try to attain in meditation, so that we can take it with us all day long. If we cannot meditate at night, and we cannot take it with us the next day, something is wrong. Something is wrong. We need to apply it. We need to apply that space in our life where we are not dragged off by feelings and things of this world. The Gita says we act in a certain way. It was mentioned. Single-minded, that concentration, that trains the mind, but also separates us from the act. We are all part of everything, but we must see ourselves as separate from it, so that we can use it rather than it using us. And that is the goal, to become a creator of the world in which you live by gaining control of it, by gaining control of our lower nature. Who knows better, those of us who have tried to meditate or meditate? Your lower nature goes, hey, no, you're not doing this right now. I'm too worried about this. I'm too worried about that. This happened today or that happened. No way you're going to calm me down. But that's its purpose. You must talk to that person, that self that we've created, that reacts to certain things in certain ways, for whatever reason that we have created it for. It's for a purpose, but it's for our purpose. Many times it's not for the purpose of bringing people together. as a theosophist, as a human being, we want to learn and teach cooperation. And that cooperation is with oneself. Having patience to sit and be quiet and not be frustrated, I'm not doing it. It's not happening. We'll stop looking at ourselves. Just, we are told to sit and be mindful. So you're mindful of all the garbage? That's okay. Everything is okay. There's nothing that's wrong. We make it wrong. It just is. And the Gita says that, give it up. Don't take everything personally. It's not personal. As a theosophist, one of our goals is impersonality. It's our goal, ever striving for impersonality. Because otherwise, what happens? We degenerate into derision, conflict, personalities. Rise above it. Okay, we're on a higher plane just by doing that. It's amazing. By being impersonal. And that's the meditation. That's the meditation. You know, there's all kinds of things that we can say to ourselves that brings us back from that meditative state and puts that meditative state in front of us. And that's when something is happening and we witness it. That is the meditative state. You are ever the witness of the change because you have arrived. You have arrived home. You have arrived home with Ishwara. There's many techniques that Mr. Judge points out to us, and we just find them fascinating because one always wants to arrive home quickly. But, you know, sometimes that's not possible. Because everything has to be pursued. Because the first time, it's very unlikely that anything will be of notice to us. But it's persistence, day after day, week after week, month after month, with no recognition from anyone but yourself. You're always journeying toward that place. I'll just read a paragraph Mr. Judge has written in the letters that have helped me. It is well to pursue some kind of practice and pursue it either in a fixed place or in a mental place which cannot be seen or at night. The fact that what is called dharana, dhyana, and samadhi may be performed should be known. Dharana is selecting a thing, a spot, or an idea to fix the mind on. Dhyana is contemplation of it. Samadhi is meditating on it. When attempted, they of course are all one act. Now then, take what is called the well of the throat or pit of the throat. Select it, which is dharana. Hold the mind on it, dhyana. Meditate on it, samadhi. This gives firmness of mind. Then select the spot in the head where the shushuma or shushumna nerve goes. Never mind the location. Call it the top of the head. Then pursue the same course. This will give some insight into spiritual minds. At first, it is difficult, but it will grow easy by practice. If done at all, the same hour of each day should be selected as creating a habit, not only in the body, but also in the mind. Always keep the direction of Krishna in mind. Namely, that is done for the whole body corporate of humanity and not for oneself. Hope this gives you some ideas or some questions.
In the back.
How does the theosophical notion of muttering differ from the popular notion of reciting or repeating a mantra?
Well, reciting and repeating a mantra has power. It has purpose. But if it's done not knowing what that purpose is and not knowing the power of it, it is for naught. It's an empty gesture. It's like praying to an outside God. It's an empty gesture. But all sounds have effect. All sounds have power. And we are told that by muttering the name of God, or the gods, Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, one will eventually rise to that state. There's an aid that's given, the sacred word Om, the saying of that mantra has a very beneficial effect on every human being, but it cannot be done in anger or in selfishness. So, but the only power that that mantra has, if one understands what it means, it's three syllables, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. And so while one is reciting it, one is in his mind, in their mind, contemplating the meaning of these sounds. So it's purposeful. As a mantra is purposeful, but many do not know why mantras are used. But they're magic. They're one of the tools of magic that we do not understand. But many, many in the religions that practice this for a reason. You know, things are accomplished. But like any religion, it falls into decay when the rituals have lost their power.
Talking about concentration, brought up that by concentrating we have an effect on the inner man. So is there, what would be a connection, if there is one, between having an effect on the inner man and isolating the soul? Is there something there, is there a bridge there that we're trying to grasp?
We know there's a bridge there. We just haven't crossed it. We know that it exists between this between these worlds. You know, the act of concentrating, it says it really separates our physical from our astral. So right there, we're in the psychic realm. We're in that realm of electromagnetic energy. Everything exists there.
Well, we were thinking one of the distinctions that both HPV and Mr. Judge make between, you know, Hatha Yoga versus Raja Yoga is that Raja Yoga is the yoga of the mind and it's persistent. And Hatha Yoga is a physical thing, and once you die, it's whatever you did is gone. And so it, maybe this raising of the mind and the activation of the concentration of this astral has something to do with that.
Well, when we do concentrate, we're raising up the lower and making it more porous to the dictates of the soul. So the soul, we think, is the observer and is observing what is going on. So if we can clear the clutter out, that can make us more, I mean, we have all this knowledge inherent in us. It's just getting rid of the clutter in order for this knowledge to come through and for us to keep it. And as was just said, the difference between Raj Yoga and Hatha is that with Raj Yoga, whatever we're going to be learning, we will bring it with us into a following life.
By meditating, we rid ourselves of these tendencies, but these things that are holding us back. It's a work in progress. That's why there is a great benefit for now and for our afterlives if we meditate. There is a great mystic idea behind that, because we've heard of other monks saying that they need to get to have a certain amount of meditation so that they can incarnate more quickly. So, you know, we always go, okay, but truth may not be told to those that are ignorant.
I think I'm hearing meditation and concentration in two different ways. The one that I think I'm hearing is that there is a set time and a set place, morning and night, for another time period, and there's a designated, concentrated effort in a very punctual, timely cycle. The other way I think I'm hearing it is that there is, with a lot of practice, an ongoing effort during the waking hours between those two sessions of trying to meditate, concentrate, and lift everything up to a higher stance. Am I hearing it wrong, or?
No, we think you're getting it right. Learning how to concentrate is a way of living. To concentrate on everything. When we look at the idea of the mundane, to concentrate just on what you're doing without everything scattering in your head. We've all experienced doing something, you know, physical, but our minds are somewhere else, and then you realize you put your keys in the refrigerator. And so these are way, you know, learning how to concentrate, and it doesn't, you're never too old to learn how to concentrate. And we think that in regards to meditation, that one has to be able to concentrate in order to go to that higher process of meditating. Because if you can't concentrate, if you can't focus on something, then you're not going to be able to meditate. That's what our feeling is.
What was the question again?
About concentration and meditation. Are they two separate things?
Well, it's one process. You can't have one without the other. And that, the Gita says single-mindedness is how we should live our day. So that, what does that mean? Live each moment at a time. Don't be in the past. Don't be in the future. Just be ever present. Be single-minded. That's a yoga which we can practice.
Is there some kind of reason why we should pick the same time every day to meditate?
Habit. Excuse me.
Well, habit is certainly part of it, but we, there's...
If it's habitual, you're not really concentrating.
Yeah. Just the time is habitual.
But, it sets up a cycle. You know, if you do it every morning, that's something, it's a cycle of every morning, you're going to be doing that. And the philosophy talks of the importance of cycles and keeping things regular and doing it with meditation, doing it the same time every day.
It makes you strong. By regularity, by cycles, by you being in control of the cycle, and you making the cycle. You have created something. And again, the end in view. You want to isolate the soul or free it from material life, from the pairs of opposites. So that time, that place, that all becomes one thing. So we try to make ourselves strong in this spiritual life, and this is one way we can. We need all the help we can get, but we have to build it in ourselves. You know, we have friends here that remind us, but they're not responsible for us. They are friends. They will help us. But the law helps those who help themselves.
Well, we have several wonderful textbooks from the Bhagavad Gita to the Voice of Silence, from the Epitome to many others. We hear these names, the Gita and many of the books of literature, whether we know it or not, reading them makes the mind more elastic. And we have heard of the term singer, a great opera called Die Meistersinger. Once we do that, we have loosened up this muscle in our head to a degree that it responds to what it hears. mind and what it hears. The hearing is inside, not from the outside. Listen. And we begin to do that exercise certainly makes one fit. So I think what the card is trying to show us that this does not happen overnight. Practice. And many read the little book any time of the day. And what we may read comes back to us in those quiet moments. And we, whether we know it or not, have made our minds like rubber.
No, we got stuck back at elasticity because what's happened to the world. It's lost its elasticity. It's lost its cosmopolitanness. It's great integration. But when the elasticity wears out, it becomes rigid. And that's what we all have to guard against.
And another thing that was mentioned in the comment was about the voices. And if we, as we said previously, if we can try and clear our minds of the clutter, we can hear, as what the name of that one of the books, The Voice of the Silence, and that voice can come through then.
Before we heard of the word culture in its theosophical sense associated with concentration, anytime we would think of the word culture, we would associate it with a farmer growing crops or florist growing flowers, and they culture the flowers, they direct the way the flowers are going to bloom, etc. Well, if we use that word theosophically, with the culture of concentration, then this thing that we call concentration, that must, whatever that power is or whatever the thing it is that concentrates, it must be below who we truly are. Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to culture it. Does that make sense? And what are we trying to bring it, like what would be the full bloom of concentration if we're able to bring it fully forward?
Well, I think it's the gist of what we're talking about, the culture of concentration. We need to train our mind, our attention, so that it does not wander off from here to there. We're all being trained. We're training ourselves, or choosing not to. And that's what we see. People do not train themselves. They do not have that discipline. They do not see the value for themselves. But again, the premise on which all of this is based is not for oneself. It's for humanity. It's for everyone to share in that knowledge and that awareness. So.
And the mind is the principle that directs this whole idea of concentration. Because if we wake up and with meditation too, because if we wake up in the morning and that's the time that we usually meditate, and we're lying in bed and we're thinking, oh, I don't want to get up and do this, that's the lower mind speaking. Whereas if you get up and you force yourself to move and you force yourself to, do whatever your practice is for meditation, then we think that would be the higher mind motivating us. And with daily concentration, we have to be aware that something else has invaded our mental space. If we're trying to be focused, if we're trying to be one-pointed, and something pops in and, you know, you're totally, you know, off the track that you were, then that's the time when you kind of need to pull your mind back and say, whoa, wait a minute, we're just really thinking off the deep end here. So we think that it's the mind that's controlling this whole process.
Well, and that's why meditation will put you in control of that mind. The mind needs to be our servant. It needs to be our servant. And how do we do that? How do we make the mind our servant? We are ruled by our mind, by our feelings and sensation, our wants and our, you know, it's, you know, if we just let ourselves go and be passive, we are pulled from one thing to another all day long. No steadiness of any kind. That's just the nature of the world in which we live. We have to create our own steadiness. And by meditating, just give it a couple of minutes in the morning and in the evening. Just say, all right, let me just try 5 minutes. Let me just sit and just let me concentrate, or just let me just consider. And even if it's nothing, if it's, you see, think it's fruitless, fine. Again in the evening. Just keep up a pattern. Try to create a habit. Again, your motive is what's important. Because if the motive is not of the highest and altruistic, you're going to stop. You're going to do it for yourself for a while, but then if you're doing it for yourself, yourself can find other things to do. It can. So we need to raise the stakes.
This culture of concentration have anything to do with what is known as meditation with a seed? There's meditation with the seed, and then there's meditation
without
a seed.
It's just techniques to arrive or to get there. He gives you numerous ways that will touch your nature. And there's 5 ways or 6 different ways of approaching this, and they're just disciplines.
So is the seed a seed thought? Is that
seed
what
thought
about?
Or idea? Yep, seed thought. That's all the seed is. And then without a seed, without a thought. So I mean, I would invite all fellow theosophists to read this as often as they can. If not for anything else, to put one back in focus a little bit, because it's a battle in this world in which we live, to live a life in spirit. Well, that battle goes on every day, and it will only get stronger because we're becoming more and more materialistic. But that's only a portion of the world in which we live. There's much more of the world that is spiritual. And we just have to give them some light so that they too can shine. And we do that by coming here each week to help disseminate these ideas and remind you that you can become part of this. A voluntary contribution of a time, of your service, and of your money. And all are welcome to participate. Meeting adjourned.